Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Ann Ball, John Russell, and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has made history by becoming the country's longest-serving political leader. Abe broke the record this week by serving 2,887 days in office. The next longest-serving leader was Taro Katsura. He led Japan three different times between 1901 and 1913. The 65-year-old Abe is also the second longest-serving leader of the group of seven major economies. Only German Chancellor Angela Merkel, in office since 2005, has served longer. Abe's third term is expected to end in September 2021. He has said he does not plan to seek a fourth term. Abe's first term lasted just 1 year, from 2006 to 2007. He returned to office in 2012 and has since led his ruling coalition to six national election victories. Abe spoke to reporters about reaching the new record. "Day by day, I have made efforts to achieve the policies that I have promised," he said. "And because of these daily efforts, I'm here to mark this day." Abe's main goals in office have centered on attempts to strengthen Japan's economy and defense. He has long called for a constitutional change to permit the creation of a full Japanese military force. That change has not happened. Abe seeks to amend the Constitution's Article 9, which was added after Japan was defeated in World War II. The article states that the country surrenders its right to establish armed forces for war. Any constitutional change must win the approval of two-thirds of both houses of parliament, plus a majority in a national referendum. Abe's campaign has struggled to get support among a public more concerned with economic issues and the country's social security system. The long-serving prime minister has become identified with Abenomics, a set of policies aimed at speeding up economic growth. Abe's plan for the government to buy securities and spend more while keeping interest rates low has created growth, but it has been slower than promised. Speaking to reporters, Abe repeated his plans to spend his remaining time in office trying to improve the economy, serve Japan's aging population, and seek the constitutional change. Abe has survived several scandals, including his own and other ones involving government ministers. The most recent involved his yearly cherry blossom viewing party. Abe has been accused of using taxpayer money to hold a gathering of political supporters the night before the party. I'm Brian Lynn.
China showed off its Mars spacecraft during a landing test last week in the northern province of Hebei. China is planning to send a lander and rover to Mars next year to explore parts of the Red Planet. The United States and European Space Agency are also sending rovers to the planet in 2020, and the United Arab Emirates plans to launch an orbiter. Zhang Kujian is head of the China National Space Administration. Before the landing test, he told foreign diplomats and the media that China's Mars mission is on schedule. Officials say the Mars lander successfully passed a hovering and obstacle avoidance test. The landing area had small piles of rocks on the ground, similar to what the uneven surface on Mars is like. The lander will have to move around on this kind of surface when it gets to the planet. In 2016, China officially began the Mars exploration mission work, Zhang said, and currently all of the different development work is progressing smoothly. China has developed a powerful rocket, the Long March 5, to send the spacecraft to Mars in 2020. Zhang Rongqiao is chief designer of the Mars mission. He said the trip to the planet will last about 7 months, but landing on it will take only about 7 minutes. The landing will be the most difficult part of the space flight, he said. Many spacecraft sent to Mars have been lost or destroyed over the years. Only the U.S. space agency NASA has been successful with 8 landings. China's space program plans to use a Long March 5 rocket to send a spacecraft to the moon by the end of this year or early next year. The Chang'e 5 spacecraft will bring back pieces of rock from the moon's surface. Last January, a Chang'e 4 probe successfully touched down on the far side of the moon. While NASA sent humans to the moon, this was the first time for a probe to touch down on the lesser-known far side. The landing was a major success for China's space program. China first landed a spacecraft on the moon in 2013. The U.S. government has barred most space cooperation with China out of security concerns. The ban has kept China from sending crews to the International Space Station, or ISS. In 2003, China became the third nation to put a human in space with its own rocket. The former Soviet Union and the United States were the first. Since then, China has been racing to catch up with the two countries. It hopes to become a major space power by 2030. I'm Anne Ball.
Today on Everyday Grammar, we will explore two relatively new methods of communicating: text messages and internet forums. We will talk about two common expressions you might see: LOL and I know, right? These expressions carry much more meaning than you might expect, as we will see.
We start with the term LOL. LOL is short for laughing out loud, as in, I am laughing out loud. The subject, I, and the be verb, am, have been left out. Basically, LOL expresses a person's opinion about something. You might think that is the end of the story, but it is not. The term LOL has a much richer meaning than what we just told you. We will talk more about it later. Our second term, I know, right, seems like a simple statement. The words I know are the subject and verb. The word right is a kind of tag question, a word that is connected to the expression. But I know right, like LOL, has a much more interesting story than you might expect.
John McWhorter is an expert on languages. In the book Words on the Move, he notes that LOL serves an important purpose in written communication: easing. By easing, McWhorter means actions that people do to show they are feeling at ease or trying to be nice. For example, in real life, people often laugh or smile. They do this to show they are at ease and that the situation is not too serious. LOL, McWhorter says, serves that same purpose in written communication. English speakers use LOL at the beginning, middle, or end of a sentence. In many cases, they use LOL to soften language or bad news. Here is an example. A person borrowed a friend's car to run a brief errand. The borrower wrote the friend the following text message:
LOL, your car started to overheat just as I pulled into the driveway.
In this case, the person writing the text eases the news of the car overheating by starting the sentence with LOL. The writer also could have written the statement with LOL at the end of the sentence, as in,
your car started to overheat just as I pulled into the driveway, LOL.
A person might use LOL in the middle of a statement, as in,
bad news, LOL. Your car started to overheat.
In any case, the basic idea is that LOL helps make language gentler. It means far more than laughing out loud. In fact, it does not really relate to laughing at all. Anyone who used LOL to signal actual laughter would now be misunderstood. It would be quite simply a mistake, McWhorter writes. In writing, other acronyms have taken the place of LOL to show actual laughter.
Our second expression today, I know, right, is like LOL. It also serves the purpose of easing. But, as McWhorter notes, the words I know, right, show agreement in an indirect way. Instead of writing I agree or I know many times on internet forums or texts, many people use I know, right? It has a casual, pleasant sound. It is a nice way to agree with someone. So, you might see something like the following exchange on an internet discussion board.
Wow, that cat looks like Simba from The Lion King.
I know, right? It's incredible.
Imagine a change in the wording. as in,
"Wow, that cat looks like Simba from The Lion King."
I know.
Such a statement is more abrupt and far less conversational. The exchange between the two writers probably would not continue for much longer.
The point of our report today was to show you how English speakers use some terms or expressions that have more meaning than you might expect. Understanding details like these will help you when you communicate or read in casual situations. And some of the details we talked about, the placement of LOL, for example, are true of other kinds of words in English. Adverbs are one example. The next time you read internet forums or send text messages, try to find other examples of words or expressions that native speakers use. We will be back next week with another Everyday Grammar.
LOL, that was a long report.
I know, right? But hopefully it was fun and helpful for the listeners. I'm John Russell.
And I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. By February 1, 1861, 7 southern states had withdrawn from the United States of America. They created their own independent nation, the Confederate States of America. The South seceded because Abraham Lincoln, a Republican, had been elected president. Southerners believed he would support a constitutional ban on slavery. They were afraid their way of life would soon end. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe discuss the beginning of Abraham Lincoln's presidency.
President-elect Lincoln traveled by train from his home in Illinois to Washington, D.C. Along the way, he stopped to make speeches. As he got closer to Washington, he was warned that a mob was planning to attack the train. He had to continue his trip in secret. Lincoln arrived in Washington 9 days before his inauguration. It was a busy time. He talked with many people, including delegates to a peace convention. Every state was represented at the convention, except the states that had seceded. The delegates urged Lincoln to support slavery. They urged him not to go to war over the issue. Lincoln said only that he would faithfully execute the duties of president of all the United States. He said he would protect and defend the American Constitution.
While Lincoln waited for Inauguration Day, he chose the members of his cabinet. He wanted men representing all opposing groups in the Republican Party. He hoped this would unite the party and give him support in the difficult years ahead. Lincoln chose William Seward as Secretary of State, Salmon Chase as Treasury Secretary, Gideon Welles as Navy Secretary, and Montgomery Blair as Postmaster General. Seward did not like Chase, Welles, or Blair. He told Lincoln that he could not serve in the cabinet with them. He said they would never be able to work together. Lincoln answered that he would be happy to make Seward ambassador to Britain instead of Secretary of State. Seward gave up the argument and agreed to join the cabinet.
Inauguration Day was the 4th of March. President-elect Lincoln rode to the ceremony with outgoing President James Buchanan. Buchanan was ready to give up his power. He told Lincoln, "If you are as happy to get into the White House as I am to get out of it, you must be the happiest man alive." The inaugural ceremony took place outside the Capitol building. Lincoln was to give his inaugural speech before being sworn in. He had worked hard on the speech. He wanted to say clearly what his policy would be on slavery and secession. These were the issues which divided the country. These were the issues which were leading the country to civil war. This is what Lincoln said.
"There seems to be some fear among the people of the southern states that because a Republican administration is coming to power, their property and their peace and personal security are threatened. There has never been any reasonable cause for such fears. In fact, much evidence to the contrary has existed, open to their inspection. It is found in nearly all my published speeches. In one of those speeches, I declared that I had no purpose, directly or indirectly, to interfere with the institution of slavery in the states where it exists. I said I believed I had no legal right to do so, and no wish to do so. This statement is still true. I can only say that the property, peace, and security of no part of the country are to be in any way endangered by the incoming administration."
Lincoln noted that 72 years had passed since the first president was inaugurated. "Since then," he said, 15 men had led the nation through many dangers, generally with great success." He went on,
"I now begin the same job under great difficulty. The breaking up of the Federal Union, before only threatened, now is attempted. I believe that under universal law and the Constitution, the union of these states is permanent. This is shown by the history of the Union itself. The Union is much older than the Constitution. It was formed, in fact, by the Articles of Association in 1774. It was continued by the Declaration of Independence in 1776. It grew further under the Articles of Confederation in 1778. And finally, in 1787, one of the declared reasons for establishing the Constitution of the United States was to form a more perfect union. I therefore believe that, in view of the Constitution and the laws, the Union is not broken. I shall make sure, as the Constitution orders me to do, that the laws of the Union are obeyed in all the states. In doing this, there needs to be no bloodshed or violence, and there shall be none, unless it be forced upon the national government. The power given to me will be used to hold, occupy, and possess the property and places belonging to the government, and to collect the taxes. But beyond what is necessary for these purposes, there will be no invasion, no using of force against or among the people anywhere.
Lincoln then repeated some statements he had made during his campaign for president. He used them to explain the differences between North and South. One part of the country, he said, believes slavery is right and should be extended. The other part believes slavery is wrong and should not be extended. This, he said, was the only important dispute. Lincoln admitted that even if the dispute could be settled peacefully, there were those who wanted to see the Union destroyed. He said his words were not meant for them. They were meant only for those people who really loved the Union. He said,
"Physically speaking, we cannot separate. We cannot remove our sections from each other, nor build an impassable wall between them. A husband and wife may be divorced and go away from or out of the reach of each other. But the different parts of our country cannot do this. They must remain face to face, and relations, friendly or hostile, must continue between them. Is it possible to make those relations better after separation than before? Can aliens make treaties easier than friends can make laws? Can treaties be more faithfully enforced between aliens than laws can be enforced among friends? My countrymen, one and all, think calmly and well upon this subject. Nothing valuable can be lost by taking time. In your hands, my dissatisfied fellow countrymen, and not in mine, is the great issue of civil war. The government will not attack you. You can have no conflict without being yourselves the aggressors. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies. Though emotion may have damaged them, it must not break our ties of love."
Abraham Lincoln then placed his hand on the Christian holy book, the Bible. The Chief Justice of the United States then spoke the presidential oath. Lincoln repeated the words, and the United States had a new president. Lincoln's first crisis came quickly. It was a problem left unsolved by the outgoing president. Lincoln had to decide immediately what to do about the federal fort in the harbor of Charleston, South Carolina, Fort Sumter. The fort was surrounded by Southern artillery. Southern gunboats guarded the harbor. The federal troops inside Fort Sumter were getting dangerously low on food. But any attempt to send more men or supplies would be seen as an act of war, civil war.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.